You're listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. In today's episode, the podcast will take a break from our normal interview format, instead presenting a palate cleanser, where UCB teachers and staff present official UCB news and updates, focus on a specific element of long-form improv, and offer experimental one-off episodes. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast from beautiful sunny Los Angeles. I'm John Mackey. I was the guest on the last episode, but today I'm the host. And my guest is Jacob Wysocki, who improv fans might know from just a countless number of Herald teams at this point.
Movies,
television. This guy is everywhere. He's a real dream, a dream boat, I would call him.
Woo.
Jacob, how are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm feeling great.
And I thank you for that wonderful intro.
No, I felt like I needed to do you justice, and
I think
I did okay.
It was good.
I was going to go full, like, Saturday Night Live guy. Jacob Wysocki!
I don't deserve that much.
No one does.
No.
Not even the people on SNL. We're just going to talk about long form today, because that's the thing we both love, right?
Yeah, we're going to have a nice laid-back casual combo.
Yeah, you're in sandals. I'm in, like, some, like, really comfortable joggers. We're ready to just have a nice combo.
Yeah, I'm excited.
So let's start at the top.
Okay.
Of your sort of comedy career.
Yes.
You, I'm assuming, have always been a funny guy, because you're a funny guy.
Yeah.
But sort of, what was the sort of channel you sort of took to find your way into making comedy your sort of career?
Oh, interesting. Well, I was always funny. I was an only child. Mm. So I was sort of like my own entertainment. And I'd always do like little impression shows for like my folks and if they had friends over. And like when I was really young, like I had this thing called the Jakey Snakey Show. That was just like, at this point, like an offensive character.
How old were you?
Had to be like fourth, fifth grade, real early. And like my friend's parents had a camera, so we would like put on dumb little fake talk shows kind of thing. And then in high school, I kind of got tricked into auditioning for the improv team that was ran by Comedy Sports.
It was a trick. How was this a trick?
I was like a band kid. Like I was playing tuba and I had this like intro to drama class. And it was a lot of fun. And I really liked it. But I wasn't allowed to do more than one like after school extracurricular.
Oh, okay.
And the teacher was like, I was like carrying the tuba back and the teacher was like, come audition. And I was like, I'm not supposed to. And she's like, just come audition.
Oh.
And I didn't know what comedy sports was. I really didn't know what improv was. And I immediately did like a brown bag. I was immediately dirty. And they're like, this is like clean comedy.
Yeah, right.
And I was like, hard way to learn it. And then I stayed with Comedy Sports for a very long time.
I know that about you. I know that like the sort of Comedy Sports, like more short form world was where you started doing comedy.
Yeah.
And like, so that started in high school. So
yeah,
like
so
that's
like
been
freshman year of high school. Yeah. So like 14.
Wow.
And then I did it into college. They had like a college team and then they had a Sunday company and I did the Sunday company and then I got onto main stage there and did that for a while. And then I just kind of got a little burnt.
Yeah.
And started, somebody told me about the Clubhouse.
Okay.
And I was like there every day of the week.
Yeah.
I was like really nerding out about it. And then it made me get back into more long form stuff. And then I finished my UCB class regimen.
Yeah.
And then auditioned.
Do you remember why, or like what sort of drove you back to doing the UCB curriculum?
I was just like, I mean, it was very derivative of just needing a place to do improv.
Mm-hmm.
I had done Comedy Sports for so long and like the higher ups there, I think were really reluctant to a lot of ideas and like bringing in short form and producing like more long form genre shows and stuff like that. And it was such a hassle.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I'm done playing forward reverse.
You're bigger than this town.
It wasn't that I was bigger than it. I just, like, I had done it so much, right. And I had taught it, and I...
You just needed to sort of do something that had a little bit more room to spread your wings.
And then when I got back into the clubhouse, I was like, this is it, man. Like, new people, fresh vibe, like, we're upstairs in this fucking shitty alley. Like, it gave a new perspective of this sort of clean-cut world that I was used to.
Yeah. When you sort of started back into the UCB curriculum, like, was the goal to get on a house team at UCB, or were you kind of just doing it to sort of...
I think I needed to just, like, finish it out.
Yeah.
Because I needed to see what it was. And I had taken my first two classes in, like, 2009, 2010 or something like that. And then did my 301, 401 in, like, 2000. Oh, God. What did I say the first years? Can we edit? Can this be edited? No, it was like 2009, 2010, and then I did my other classes like 2013 or something like that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I had a big, big gap.
A pretty big gap.
Yeah.
Interesting. So I feel like I find that happens kind of frequently where people will like start and stop and then come back.
Yeah. I guess I just can we edit this? Can we edit this? I drank the Kool-Aid. Like, after my 301, I was like, oh, this is cool. It's not this hard thing that a lot of other short-form improvisers made it seem.
Yeah.
It wasn't this,
was
like...
Was that the perception of UCB from like, a short-form audience? Was it that long-form was harder? Was that the perception?
I don't think there really was a huge theater perception of long form.
Right.
It was just not something that we did, and we didn't do it that way. And I think probably around the time it was on people's radar was the very early days of UCB, which is very different than when I entered.
Right.
So I think it was easier to judge people like fucking fish heads and like shitting on stage.
Right.
It was always like, you know, they shit on stage.
Like,
there.
Like the altness of it was the only thing that people knew about.
Yeah, but for me, I was like, that sounds amazing.
Yeah. It was,
I would
all
love to
art and or all alt and not art. That was sort of, that's a new phrase I just thought up.
Alt art is not art.
Yeah. Alt art is not art. that's a slogan of Comedy Sports. No, it's not.
It's not.
But cool. So then, I mean, then you got sort of like you sort of folded yourself into the UCB community pretty significantly.
Yeah.
After that. Like, because I know, and for me, from as a sort of person who was here and sort of saw you come in, it was very much like, there was a time where I didn't know, I'd never seen you before, and then I saw you do one show, and then I saw you all the time.
Oh, wow.
And it was like, in a good way.
Yeah,
like
no.
And I think it was like one of those things where I think you're a person who is memorable on stage,
Thank you very much.
And I think that it was like that thing of just like, I think you come at comedy in a way that a lot of other people don't. And like, I think that it's like your specific voice is very unique and memorable. So like, I saw you do a show at the clubhouse, I think. And I remember like afterwards talking to people, just like, that dude was fucking funny, man.
Oh, thank you so much.
And in like that visceral way that I think sometimes gets like lost in like a long form sort of setting because people are so concerned with the form. But I thought that you as a performer were like a performer who can do that, like sort of just visceral, like moment to moment, funny, but also anchor into like a form in a way that's really satisfying as well.
Yeah, I like forms because they're new ways to express like my own comedic persona or what I think is funny.
Yeah.
And the Herald was one that it kind of made sense to me. Like the Pretty Flower makes sense to me.
Right, yeah.
And they're so different that you get to work these like different muscles. And that was just exciting to me that I was like, new workout, like new everything.
Right.
You know?
It's like a whole new, it's like when your body gets used to like one exercise and then you try something else and you're just like, oh wait, that feels good too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't feel intrinsically bad at long form or game. Right. You know what I mean? Like all of the traits that I had learned did transfer over.
Yeah. I think that's something interesting I wanted to actually talk to you specifically about is the idea that like the concept of game in UCB, the sort of UCB approach to game, as it compares to like the sort of very like rigid sort of set up literal games in short form, did like sort of like laying those two concepts over each other, do you think that helped you sort of grasp the UCB style of game like more quickly, or were there like sort of things that you found yourself having to like shake out of your system.
I think I had to break a lot of like game is not pattern, pattern is not game mentality. Because despite like short form not having quote unquote game, like we called it doing bits. Like you're doing these satellite games, these bits, interior of the bigger forward reverse or the new choice that's keeping your stuff going.
Oh, okay. So you, even within the game of a short form scene, you were, you would find yourself like playing like UCB style game to continue that scene in a way.
Yeah. I mean, inadvertently, like,
Just
that's because game works. You know what I mean?
It's like the instinctive mode of communication.
Like
a funny person who's having a conversation is playing off of someone and they realize that like playing this, doing this bit is easier than trying to just be funny moment to moment with
and
new
writing
scenes.
Jokes. You know what I mean? Like I could argue, please don't make me do it, that narrative has game.
Yeah.
Cause if you're doing a narrative scene, you can like, you know, genre on top of it. You can like satirize it.
Yeah.
There's so many different ways to just like have this classic story of like, we're going to go from A to B and there's all different ways to do it. And like, you kind of get bored, so you start playing like character games. Like I'm this rigid, crazy soldier dad, and like that's playing game.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's just 4 minutes of it. You and don't have like to revisit it.
And I think it's like going back to that idea that I think a lot of people talk about how like sort of like in television, like character, every character is just has a game.
Yeah.
Every television character is just a game slotted into a 22-minute episode.
Exactly. An archetype, you know, like it's a placeholder.
Yeah.
And then you get to pop with the fun. So it wasn't really like, for me, it wasn't really layering the two. It was more like understanding how, cause I'm never going to break my short form learning.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just too much time.
Right.
And it's too much like gut instinct. Mm-hmm. So I just had to figure out like how my play style plays game and how I define game. And how I play it within these rule structures.
Right.
Because I do feel like I'll play game differently on a Three Princes show that's not Harold related than
which
I do.
Which is your
on
group that does Pretty Flower.
Yes.
For those listeners out there, give them a little context.
Yes.
Jacob I do. Has a group with Zach Wayama
and Devin Field.
You do Pretty Flower.
Yes.
And maybe just for anybody who doesn't know what Pretty Flower is, if you want to just. The basic structure
of the form is there's a core scene and then you jump out into tag runs, but you always revisit to your main core scene. Some people like to call it the Family Guy form. I hate that, but it's essentially like the Family Guy form.
Yeah, yeah, it's like a mono scene with sort of breaks that sort of follow discovered ideas from within that.
Yeah, that exactly.
Yeah.
But I play game differently there with those dudes because I have less constraints and nobody's going to tell me that it's wrong than I do on Harold Night because I have to like be closer to curriculum and I don't get to interpret game when I'm doing Harold. Mm. But I think when I'm doing other UCB improvised, sorry, can we edit that? when I do other UCB improv, like I get to play game in a way that fits me more because it's more interpretive to my style.
Do you think are there sort of signifiers or things that you could sort of cite as things that you find yourself like wanting to curb when you're on Harold Night versus doing a show elsewhere? Like, are there certain impulses that you know, like, when I'm doing this in front of students, I want them to see me doing it this way versus.
I think with straight manning, there's a lot of that.
Mm.
I have been told a lot that my straight manning's not that great or whatever. So I spent a lot of time working on it, but ultimately I realized like I'm a bad straight man in improv because I'm a bad straight.
Ooh, whoa, dude.
Well, I just rocked the mic. Yeah,
earthquake.
I'm a bad straight man in improv because I'm a bad Jesus. I'm going to have to do it a third time now.
Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah.
Can you just put your hands in the air and not?
I'm a bad straight man in real life. So I'm a bad straight man in improv because I'll just like let an unusual thing happen to observe it and be like, this is fucking wild. Or let that person talk at me.
Right. You're like the kind of person who like at a bar will like let an insane person talk to you for 30 minutes just for the story and like the experience of like feeling what that's like
for the data. And I'm also nice. And I'm like, this guy probably needs to talk to somebody.
Right.
This intensity's so strong.
Do you think does that not sort of like dovetail into like a supportive straight man role in the classic sense of like a UCB straight man, though, in that you are facilitating the unusual while still like sort of contextualizing it and reacting to it, though?
Exactly. Like, yeah. Exactly. Like, it took me realizing that I'm a bad straight man in real life to put the pieces together that like a straight man in UCB should be floating in a way that game can continually exist.
Right.
So I was like, oh, I don't need to straight man like how I see everybody else straight man. I can be me, and it actually helps.
Yeah.
How it's supposed to go more.
Well, that, and that's, I think that's specifically from seeing you perform is something that I feel I've always felt about you is as a performer in every scene, you find a way to both support the scene, but also be fun.
Thank
right?
you. And I think that's so important.
Yeah. Because I think that's a thing that gets lost so often on Herald Night.
I'm shaking my head vigorously.
But and I don't think it's a negative. I think it's just like this like perception that a good straight man is like antagonistic and is like is opposing mm-hmm. the unusual player instead of like sort of strolling with them.
Or servicing.
I think that you as a performer are someone who is very good at sort of underlining the unusual thing, making it clear that you recognize what's weird here,
mm-hmm.
but also allowing that person to continue to play, and you are sort of there, like sort of volleying them up like a balloon. Like it's like the game where it's like, don't let the balloon hit the floor. Instead of like being the guy who like catches the ball and throws it back to the person, you're kind of that person who's like very supportive and like sort of keeping them in the air.
Thank you.
But like letting them shine in the best way possible while you're still sort of having fun.
That's nice to hear, because sometimes I'm fearful that my fun makes it seem like I need the attention, but I'm like, no, like comedy is so much about momentum that I'm like, if this scene is fun and we're all here at this energy level, like imagine where we can crack through in that second beat.
Yeah.
We can hit brand new territory.
Not to interrupt, but I think also you're like, you are a performer, man. I feel like I'm just like totally stroking your ego right now.
Oh,
but
I'm going to walk away feeling great.
One of the funniest people in the world. I really
Thank
do.
You, man.
But like I think that you as a performer are a performer who gives a team permission to have fun.
Thank you.
Which I think is a thing that it's like, it's almost like that feeling of like, you're there to be like, hey guys, we get this. Let's have fun.
But this
together.
Should be fun though,
yeah.
right?
Like, it's like in reminding your team and the audience that like at the end of the day, improv should be this joyful, like experience that everybody is just having a blast doing. And nobody is like beating their head against the wall. Be like, why didn't I fucking catch that thing in that scene? Like you as a performer, I think are so good at like spreading that like positivity and like joy
Thank
of
you.
Doing improv.
Thank you. I owe a lot of that to comedy sports.
Yeah.
Because it's a fun time.
Right.
It's a show.
Yeah.
And maybe this will get me in trouble, but Herald's a show.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's a tool to facilitate students. I know it's like, it's
I
a part of-
I think they want it to be good though. They want it to be a thing that people see and they're like, man, I got to go back to that show.
Yes.
Like, this is a cool thing.
And I hear so many of my, this is- early in my days in Herald, but a lot of peers just like getting so down on themselves mm-hmm. and being like, I didn't do this, I didn't do that. And I was like, I don't ever want to walk away being like feeling that way. Mm-hmm. So I'm just not going to do it. And I'd rather fail big. That's a huge comedy sports thing. First thing they teach you besides yes and is fail big. Like I'd rather fail big on Herald Night and get told like, you're doing the most, dude, and like pull it back
right.
than be like, oh, I didn't do it. Or I'm really trying to work on these notes, but I can't.
Yeah.
Like, remove excuses.
Yeah.
And that's a way that I can remove those excuses by just failing big and doing it.
Maybe an interesting jumping off point from that. Has there ever been a time where someone sort of like gave you a note or something that you, like, what is a note that you were given that you really did take to heart and, like, really try to enact? Like, what was, like, what's, like, one that you were, like, you didn't realize it about yourself? And somebody told you, like, hey, maybe think about this. And you were like, totally. And that's a thing, like, you tried to work on.
This is a good question. I think it's, like, very early on. This was, like, we had a great teacher, Greg Byrne, in college team.
Okay.
And I remember, this must have been my first year on. And he just, like, we had just done a show. he gave me a note, and I was like, yeah, but I was like trying to do this. And he went, take a fucking note. Mm. And I think that's been the most important thing, is because I like to not necessarily make excuses, but I like to justify why I do stuff to create an understanding between me and the coach or whatever. Right. Or sort of be like, well, this is what I was trying. Where along those steps was the mistake? And sometimes you just need to fucking take the note.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think the more older I've gotten, the worse I have been listening to that, especially with UCB, because I just want to get it. It's like a tough thing for me to wrap my head around. Like, game was hard for me because of all the other preconceived notions of improv.
Right.
And so I spent a lot of time being like, okay, so I was wrong. This is what I was trying to do. And I feel like I'm going against that take the fucking note thing, but it's like, I got to get it. I got to get it, Greg. I got to understand what I'm doing here.
Yeah. Do you think you're the kind of person who needs to... what I'm trying to gather is you seem like the kind of person who needs to understand why what they were doing doesn't work in order to really internalize it.
Yeah.
Like, you're like kind of the person who's just like, okay, but yeah, but why?
Yeah. It would be helpful to understand why.
Yeah.
And I've always been like a sort of DIY learner, especially when it comes to comedy. And I think in life, I'm the type of learner who learns by mistakes. Like, I don't get parking tickets because I got a parking ticket and it was expensive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not because I
told you don't park there.
Yeah. Or like, you shouldn't get a parking ticket ever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I learned how to not be in a bad, like, creative environment because I was in a bad creative environment. You know? Yeah. I learned to not do this improv move because I did it and nobody laughed.
Yeah. That's like, man.
So if you can
express like that literal moment, like I did this thing that I thought was funny. The audience hated it. Maybe what I thought was funny isn't funny.
Yeah.
And I need to think about it some more.
And it's kind of crippling.
Yeah.
Cause like if I'm one thing, I'm funny.
Yeah.
That's how I've structured my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like, so when it doesn't go, you're just like, why?
Yeah.
And I trust a lot of people at UCB who are my coaches to tell me why or give me their opinion on why. And I hope that doesn't feel combative.
No.
I hope it feels like a part of the learning process.
And I think that you are such like a sort of friendly and like sort of like gregarious person that I don't think anyone would sort of hear you saying like, I need to seek out more clarity or any of these things to a note, like, and view it as you being like big time, you know what I mean? And so I think that that's also something for me as just a person learning anything. I've always been the kind of person who really has to like dive deep into it and be like, but like, why? Like, I literally had a teacher in high school who like called my mom and was just like, John asks way too many questions.
But like, that's good. That's like being I think this was like probably when I was in like college and I was like a philosophy minor, but I was like, I want to be when you get a PhD, it's like you're a philosopher of biology or a philosopher of physics. Like, I want to be a philosopher of comedy.
Mm.
And like, you have to spend the time to think that much.
Yeah.
You have to ask that many questions. You have to like be the Socrates of your Herald team or whatever.
Right,
like, and hopefully all 8 members are thinking about comedy that much. But if you're not fucking driving home with no radio on after a bad show, like, you're wrong.
Yeah.
In my mind.
Yeah.
Because you need to think about it. You need to like give your brain that opportunity to learn. Opportunity. Can we edit that out?
Opportunity. Let's just say it a bunch of times.
Opportunity.
Let's not edit it out. Let's double it and like add echo.
Yeah.
Opportunity.
Yeah.
This is kind of an interesting thing I'd love to talk to you about because I sort of view you as a very positive person. Like, you seem to be a person who tries to stay upbeat.
Yeah, I do. I try to stay groovy,
Yeah. And so when you find yourself in those moments, like those quiet rides home after a show that you feel like went bad, how do you sort of get yourself from like that sort of headspace of where you're kicking yourself and you're like, that fucking sucked. I'm bad. Like, am I bad at this? Like, those like sort of moments of doubt. How do you as a performer sort of push yourself through those moments of like doubt in everything, not just on like like specifically on like Harold Knight or whatever, but like in general, like how do you sort of push through those moments of doubt and frustration?
With Harold Knight, you're lucky because you get to do it again next week. And I get to go to practice a couple days later. And the program is designed to have that sort of fallback.
Right.
So I'm very lucky in that I have a bad show. You know, the most I'm going to think about it is 6 days or whatever. Outside of that, I think it's just like when you spend the time to think and be bummed, you identify why it was bad and it makes the issue less.
Right.
You go, oh, I didn't listen.
Yeah. You diagnose the thing that made it bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully you do.
Yeah.
And I think that minimizes the emotional aspects because you've connected it more logically or whatever. Yeah.
You at least give yourself like a goal for the next time. Like,
yeah.
It's like this time I definitely like I missed that very clear like sort of like offer from my scene partner. Next time when I'm in a scene, I'm going to think.
I'm just going to listen a lot harder and then I'll minimize this chance of feeling bad.
Yeah.
Minimize mistakes, maximize success, baby. But sometimes you just fucking feel shitty for 2 months.
Yeah.
And you're just I'm air quoting, bad at improv for 2 months.
Yeah.
And I remember being in a fucking high school being like, I've plateaued.
Yeah.
Being a 17-year-old improviser, I've absolutely plateaued.
I'm never going to be funny. I'm never going to be any funnier than I am right now.
Yeah. I've done all the jokes that I've got to do. Like, it's done. But those are good because you sit in it and you crack through and you eventually feel good again.
What do you think? Like, have there been any sort of shining moments in your sort of improv career that are sort of like the mile markers towards like getting it? Like, do you have any specific moments, maybe specifically in like sort of UCB style improv? Was there like a moment or a show or like a scene even that you sort of remember off the top of your head where you sort of finished that show or scene and you were like, oh shit, I get it now.
Oh man. No.
No.
Because I do still think that I'm a student of Harold. Mm-hmm. I do still think I'm a student of UCB. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I slap and like that feels good and I feel like I'm honoring Harold and I'm honoring game and like that feels great or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I've had like personal steps towards feeling like I'm understanding things, like getting on Harold Knight, like remaining on Harold Knight. If I ever were to be on a Harold Knight for more than 1 year, that would be like a step that I am getting it better.
Right.
The institution of UCB has things that make you automatically feel like you're doing better.
Right. Yeah.
Classes, grad classes, house team, graduated house team.
Yeah.
So like, I think those natural steps, like Cage Match was huge for me because the first show I ever saw at UCB was Cage Match.
Oh, really?
And I was like, I would love to do that one day.
And then you won it.
And we did a fucking great ass run.
Yeah.
And like, that was huge for me.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make me feel like I necessarily get it more. It makes me feel like I'm more involved.
Yeah.
But there's always more to learn.
Yeah.
You know, I feel comfortable with what I'm doing, which I think maybe is my version of that. Like if I can feel comfortable and not feel like dog shit and feel like I'm progressing and not feeling stagnant, like maybe that's my version of answering that question.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like a moment. It's just like, do I feel good now?
Right.
And I'll feel good in a minute.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely can't point to any specific moments too, but I think those things where you just like realize like things are starting to make sense.
You know what it is?
Like the scenes become easier.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not like after a scene, you're not like thinking like, what did I do? What did I say? What was I saying? What did I say? Like, you're like, oh no, I had a firm grasp on that whole scene.
I think also recognition from my peers. Like when you come up to me, like even after I saw your show, you did it this week. You're like, yo, I saw your show on Monday. I didn't get to say anything. I thought you were really funny. Like,
yeah.
That's fucking the tits for me. Aww. That's great.
My opinion means very little, Jacob.
No, it's not because like me, I saw Big Grande when I was at the clubhouse
right.
going 5 days a week. You know what I mean? And I was like, fuck, these guys are next level. And I was inspired. So when people that I'm inspired by enjoy my stuff, it's like, it makes me feel like I am getting it.
Yeah.
You know, when Lippert's like, oh, ho, ho, and I hear him laugh, like, I'm like, oh, I'm getting it. I'm getting it. When I hear like a Tarver laugh or something, like, I'm getting it. I'm getting it.
Huh. Yeah. I'm glad we have that influence on you. That felt really good to hear. Oh, man. Yeah, we're pretty great.
You have a lot of fans. Hey, I'll tell you what. You got a lot of fans.
You do, too. Let's dive a little more specifically into Herald Night. You've been on Herald Night for how many years?
Four years. Different team every year.
Different team every year. I think a lot of people have this, like, sort of glamorous idea of, like, I get on a Herald team and then I'm great at improv.
No.
You said, like, getting on Herald Night, you still feel like you're sort of a student of the game. Like, it's still, like, you're still learning.
I feel more volatile in my improv experience as far as, like, being able to continue doing it.
Yeah.
It's more volatile. God damn it. It's more volatile on Herald Night than it has ever been in my improv career.
Really?
You know, because you can just go away.
Yeah.
And then you got 4 years and you go away. And you didn't figure it out according to the curriculum or the powers that be at the time.
Yeah.
You know, so it's very tough to feel that way.
And your first Herald team, what was, which one was your first?
Landlord.
Landlord was your first.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like a relatively new crop of people, right?
It was half and half.
It was like half and half. It was like four people who'd never been on before.
Me, Beth, Lepley, Santina, and Devin Field.
What was that, the experience of like sort of jumping onto a team with that was sort of 50-50 like experienced, like quote unquote experienced players and like for like sort of brand new people? Did you find that like it was good to have like a sort of like veteran voice on the team, or would you have preferred to like kind of be on a team of all people who were like going it for their first time, like trying it out, or like what was that experience like?
I think I would have been swallowed if I was on like a freshman team.
Mm.
I don't know why. I think like I probably would have gone too big and too fast, and nobody would be there to like be like, yo, dude.
It would have been eight people trying to find the alpha, and and it's like there's too many opportunities for a guy who's as like sort of boisterous and like bold as you.
I
could see that.
Yeah, so I'm super happy that I've always had vets.
Mm-hmm.
Like Johnny Schwartzbein is like Papa, because I spent so much time just talking to him because he knew so much.
Yeah.
And just 15 minutes here after a show, 10 minutes here after a show, 30 minutes here after a practice, like. It was so great to have that and feel like, but we're still peers.
Mm.
But you have any info that I need, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. What was like in that first year on Herald Night, sort of what I'm trying to remember. I saw a bunch of Landlord shows. What opening did you guys do?
Oh God. What did we do? Oh, we did this thing called the Superman that got like pretty ripped up in a Besser workshop. Which it was like a combo of, I think, Pattern Organic and like Doc or something like that.
Yeah, I remember. A hybrid.
It was a weird hybrid. Yeah,
I remember that. So like coming from like a perspective of like comedy sports where like how in comedy sports, how the sort of premise of your sort of your game or whatever is like sort of inheriting the rules.
Yeah.
Did you find sort of the process of pulling premise out of an opening to be difficult? Was that something that you
Think so, because I also came from a sketch background and a lot of sketch is just people spitting out ideas and you go, that's a good one.
Mm.
So it's that to me is like a one for one
kind of the same,
from sketch.
Right.
Yeah.
It was sort of like hearing the pitch and be like, that's the one I love.
Yeah. And you like that because you see it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's easiest to say yes to.
Mm.
So if you see it, you can do the scene or whatever.
Yeah.
So I don't. It wasn't that difficult pulling premise. I probably have more hard time pulling premise now, having been on it so long, where I've probably am overthinking premise a little more. Where I'm like, is that play? I go through the list of like, is it playable? Is it like repeatable?
Right.
Instead of just like, that's a premise.
Right. And I think that you as an improviser, me judging your work from the outside, you do feel like a very impulsive, like, this is funny, I'm doing this sort of performer. And I could totally see you as a performer having that moment where if you have to think about it for more than 5 seconds, you're going to second guess it and be like, maybe not.
Yeah.
Whereas when you can just run from like shoot from your hip, you like hit the bullseye every time.
Yeah. The gut like, I'll get asked, like, why did you think it's funny? And, like, I can never answer it this way, but it's like, it was the gut. Like, the little synapse in my brain went, this will be successful, and then I went and did it,
yeah.
You know? And that's probably just from doing it for so long.
And do you, when you're initiating, like, from, like, if you're initiating a scene, mm-hmm. When you're sort of, like, formulating your initiation, how much do you think about it?
Hopefully hardly any.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's just, like, you hear it in the opening, you know, a clown but his family's balloons or whatever. And like,
yes.
And like, you just go, yeah, boom, 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 boom. Got it. Sounds good. It's in the house. Dinner's almost ready. And it's like that all just sort of clocks in, you know, right away.
Yeah.
And then there's the other version that's like, I know this is a playable premise. The way it was presented in the opening is like a one for one may not work. So where can we put it? Okay. Does that work? Like, is it too isolated? Like, can they know each other?
Yeah.
That's probably like, I don't know, 8 to 12 seconds of thinking.
Yeah.
On the back line. And yeah. If you click it, you hit it. And then if not, you go like, what was a word for a group game? And, and you sit back. But I don't like to think too much because most of when I do bad, it's always when I'm like really cooking an idea and being like, this second beat's going to be great because I had all this time to think about it and I outruled other ones that I thought were simple or had been done.
Yeah.
And it's so far-fetched that I'm the only person in the world that will ever understand what I'm trying to do because I had so much time to think about it and I know it too well.
It's like the idea of doing the work without like not showing your work.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. I had a teacher at one point in the past who gave us that note like in a class. He was like, or she, I can't remember who it was like the idea that like if you do any yes anding in your head, that's work that's been done without your team knowing it.
Yeah.
And when you walk into a scene and you initiate that scene with all of that work having been done in your head, you are essentially asking your scene partner to reverse engineer all of that work in their head.
I think
to then respond to you.
This is very interesting. Yeah. I've never thought about it like that.
Because I do think I find myself in the same situation where I overthink a second beat and I initiate it and I'm like, why didn't that work? And then it's like, oh, because that was 4 steps down the road.
Yeah.
If you had started 4 steps previously and let that person in on that work, one, you could have found something that was maybe even more fun than what you just did. Or B, like it would have been so much easier for them to follow the thing that you
and just be able to jump on board, which will ultimately be more fun.
Yeah.
And have better momentum.
Yeah. And it's like that idea too of like discovery, I think gets lost a lot in premise-based improv, like from an opening. But I think that that's another thing. Stroking your fucking ego, dude.
Oh no.
But I think something that I love about watching you perform is that you just do what you think is funny about an idea instead of doing like the like, oh yeah, that's gonna be the scene. It's like that's not I don't think that's how your brain works. And I think that's how when people are playing with you, they have this expectation of like, I'm just gonna like be here with you.
Yeah.
And we're gonna discover what's really fun about this idea instead of being like, oh, Jacob's got every piece of this all lined out. Like, we're gonna jump
into
this.
Well, it's not as fun.
Right.
Like, me and you could sit here and totally do a fucking scene where we're at a dinner date and like we rest the game and try our pasta and then you hit the game again and then the waiter comes on with a sub game and we get an edit.
Yeah.
Like, we could totally do that.
Yeah.
Not super interesting to me.
Yeah.
You know, like that's what I like least about game is that it creates like too formulaic of an experience.
Yeah.
And especially having done comedy sports, comedy sports so much, like I wanted to start breaking the form and become more artistic with it and not just do a scene where a kid brings his report card and it's bad.
Right.
And I think being fun and not thinking will get you to places that feel more artistic and less, you know, like the scene I described before, where it's just like, how many fucking date scenes have we seen?
Right.
Like that date scene could be anywhere.
Right.
And it can still have the same stakes and the same momentum.
Mm-hmm. How do you, as a performer, sort of, because I know I play with a lot of like very boisterous players, and you are a very like confident, boisterous player. How do you sort of avoid the like pitfall of like distracting yourself with detail in a scene? I think that's something that like I deal with a lot when something out, like in those moments where I'm just kind of feeling the scene, something else comes up that's not sort of in the world. Like, are you the kind of person who will like sort of let that thing exist as well? Or do you find yourself sort of being like, let's follow that thing?
Oh,
or
man.
Do you kind of try to like push it off to the side?
That's tough. Fun's fun.
Yeah.
And I'll like to follow it.
Yeah.
I'd probably be more prone to follow it non-herald.
Right.
Improv. But I think the answer is like, for me, is listening to the crowd.
Right.
You know, like, that got a big laugh. Like, we should follow that.
Yeah.
That's a laugh that'll carry
right.
with this audience's, like, consciousness.
It's what they like. It's the,
yeah.
It's literally like they gave you the input
mm-hmm.
that, like, hey, what you were doing was fine, but this is actually more what we want to see.
Yeah, and they'll let you go back to it
because right.
they're going to forgive you because they're having a good time.
Yeah.
Then there's, like, stuff where it's, like, in a middle zone where you're like, we could make the shot or we couldn't. I probably wouldn't.
Yeah.
Just based on the training here.
Right.
Where I'm just like, we'll just stay here and maybe it'll come back later.
Right.
In a third or something like that.
Yeah. I think that is the thing that I think from my perspective, when Winslow was on Harold Knight, we, I think, did a lot of distracting support moves.
Yeah.
But we sort of got to a place where we could be like, okay, that was, if we're looking at this scene in a vacuum,
yeah,
that move maybe was distracting. But we now have the opportunity of two group games, second beats and third beats, to make that not just a distracting move in like the second scene, first beat.
Yeah. Well, you can retrofit it and then everybody goes, oh, I guess that was supposed to be there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's the beauty of improv, man.
Yeah.
You literally get to build the house while you're living in it.
I'm in it, dude. It's The Sims. Ruby Red or whatever, Rosebud, get all the money.
Yeah. So and as you were saying before, you're on four different Harold teams.
Yeah.
Do you find that on each of those Harold teams, you've had to adapt to the people you play with, or do you kind of like sort of like be like, this is who I am, let's figure out how it works, or do you think each of your teams have had like a very like sort of specific like working voice?
I think always I'm going to do the like be myself and see how it works. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's probably the baseline because that's all I got, baby, is me.
All I got is me.
And I like to think no matter what combination of seven people exists, like I'll be the same.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the baseline. But when you get into the group, like you're going to be doing different things or be aware of things that are missing and be able to fill those holes. Dependent on all different people. Like, I think I've had a pretty much similar role on all of my teams, which is like a drive, like more of a driving, like initiating, getting an unusual thing out there in one of the first beats. Like, I think that's been pretty consistent for most of my Harold journey.
Yeah.
I think like the team before Yeti Dirt, I spent a lot of time sort of branching out in the utilitarian zone of like straight manning. Like, I spent pretty much all of, I think, Dirt like learning quote unquote how to straight man better and doing that work there. So like that spent a lot of time in that world. And Yetis, I'm still sort of figuring it out because everybody fucking slaps.
Yeah.
And so like I'm not needed in the same capacity or my motor doesn't need to run as fast.
Yeah.
Because Lou Wilson can slap.
Yeah.
Or Devin or Zach, like
literally,
or Tali. Literally I can name everybody. Like everybody can slap. So the pressure isn't there to create as much momentum.
Mm.
But I still have that same brain power and I'm like, where does it go?
Huh.
Where do you put the energy that you're used to having in these last three teams?
Like, right. If you're not gonna be the guy like in the pilot's chair,
yeah.
How do you still support the flight crew
with the same momentum and energy
and momentum
so it's been interesting to see how that works. And like I've never been on a team where like I switch hit as much, where I am like second group game initiator,
right?
which I really like. Because that feels more like comedy sports to me. Yeah. It's like, you're not always the star of the show.
Yeah.
And that's what Harold should be. It should be this, like, bigger group thing. And I shouldn't have to feel the pressure to be like, well, I better step out and, like, get an edit because this first scene, second beat has been 6 minutes.
Right.
Like, we got to get out of here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So that pressure's taken off. So yeah. I guess I can just focus more on the people
yeah.
and making them look great or something.
You mentioned group games.
Yes.
I like group games. Are you a group game fan?
Yeah, because it's like short form.
Yeah.
You know? And it's literally, you can just like step out and be like, this is what this is. Here are the rules. Nobody can do this. Yeah. And that's a short form game. Nobody can talk.
Yeah.
You know? Short yeah. form game.
How if you were like, if somebody was like, can you give me one piece of advice on initiating group games? Because I personally, as a performer, think that like I have a very low batting average as a group game initiator.
Yes. Yeah.
I think they're hard. I think group games are pretty hard if they're not managed properly.
I would say.
What's like the group game advice? The Wysocki like special.
The Wysocki special.
Group game
it's going to be a bit of a Wysocki special because I say it's not up to the initiator. Because it's organic.
Yeah.
It can. There's no way to poorly initiate a group game. It's how that stimulus is taken.
Right.
Is it repeated? Is it slightly changed? Is it eight people doing it? Is it fuck you, man, go home? Like you know, like it all boils down to that. And then like, how fast does that little bit like keep reverberating over and over and
right.
over and over? Because it's the first pattern.
Right.
Like, and the first pattern can be wrong for sure.
And it is sometimes.
Yeah. And you're just like, oh man, we're in this like group game where it's just like, we're mimes, but we all fart. And so it's like 4.5 minutes of like,
okay, that's a great scene. That's
but,
a great one.
Yeah. But yeah, it's about how the group transforms it and surprises himself and surprises the audience to take it into a space that's untraditional.
Yeah. Do you have are you a big, like, everybody get in here guy?
Or love
you,
it.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
Because that's the easiest way to be like, here's the rule.
Right.
Don't break this rule.
Yeah.
You know, okay, everybody come in here. I just, you know, like, we lost the, I don't have a good one. Everybody come in here. We lost the pen. Like, just need to find out who took the pen.
Right.
That's the rules.
Yeah.
Like, we're just going to find out who took the pen.
Yeah.
And then we all get to, like, mess around in that space or whatever.
Yeah.
Terrible example. I'm embarrassed.
No. Cause let's think about this. Who took the pen? It's, we're all, Jerry took the pen. Jerry didn't take the pen. It's, that's a great example. It
yeah.
just leads to a lot of, you did? No,
I didn't,
but you did. No, I never did.
Well, where's the pen now?
The pen? Who knows?
Who
Somebody
knows?
Took the pen. And then when we find out at the end of that scene that the guy who initiated the pen search is the guy who actually took the pen.
It's been in his lapel the whole time.
Yeah. Here's the thing, because the audience doesn't know because they can't see because it's invisible because it's improv.
It's improv, baby. Look at how hot that group game was. Yeah.
Dude, we just did a banger of a group game on the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast.
Take that.
Yeah, if you guys want to reuse that in your indie shows, just initiate.
Yeah. I like everybody get in here. I think the one person step out, like potential organic, is has the biggest chance for no return.
Yeah.
Because it's like, then it really boils down to pacing, how quick everybody jumps on it, how quick it's identified, yeah. and how quickly it's framed.
Right.
But everybody get in here, it's just like, there's an understanding, and then you have the freedom to take that hard left and be like,
right.
wait, this guy just said that he's like a cyborg,
yeah.
and like now we're in like a tag run that we would have never gotten to in yeah. any other way. But I don't like just like standing around in a moon, a half circle, being like, well, here's mine.
Yeah.
And here's mine.
It's like those joke bag group games. That's just
yeah.
like everybody, you got to think of your funniest joke.
Mm-hmm. And it's tough because
yeah.
like Devin's going to write a funnier joke than me most of the time. It's just, he's just better at it, you know?
Yeah.
So I just got to make sure I go before Devin.
Yeah.
Make sure I go before, and then I'm fine or whatever. But yeah, not my favorite. I want to move around and I want to like fucking break a chair or some shit, you know?
Yeah. 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 That's an interesting thing. I like, do you consider yourself like a physical performer?
Not as much as I used to be.
No.
In high school, dude, I would like flail my arms around. I would do this like weird hurricane move where I'd like slap my back, and I was all over the place. I think UCB's made me a more stoic improviser, where I don't move around as much, but I use my body. I put that energy into my body in a character.
Embodies a character, and that informs the scene.
Yeah, totally. Because I just got too many, like, we don't need this, like, crazy Chicken Man notes early on, where I think it made me just sort of slow down.
You've done Chicken Man seven times in seven shows in a row. Can we not do Chicken Man one scene?
Dude, any scene needs the Chicken
Man.
You're
just like, anybody can do Chicken Man. We're going to do Chicken
Man. It's not my guy. It's all of our guy.
Cool. So we're going to wrap up here shortly, but, just like one sort of like parting question.
Yes.
I think a lot of people who listen to this podcast are students of the game.
Yes.
They're trying to figure this out for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is something that you as a performer, could offer a student who is just trying to like sort of get their feet, on the ground in this whole game we call, long form improv. Like, what do you think is the most, like, the best advice you can give just like some dummy who's trying to learn this stuff?
Develop a comedic voice outside of the improv school that you're attending.
Mm.
I think is super important. And
in terms of creating things that aren't sort of affiliated.
Yeah.
Like sort of like your own thing somewhere else that like allows you the independence to like fail your way.
I think ultimately, yes. But I think on a simpler level, like, watch funny stuff and know what you like and know what you don't like. Mm. That's not in a vacuum. Mm. You know, like, don't just like UCB comedy and UCB comedians on TV because you go there.
Right.
Like them because they tickle your fancy.
Right.
Like
what you like.
Yeah. I think do that out, like, don't have somebody influencing your taste, because then you're going to curate based on somebody else's taste and not your own. You're going to do jokes based on somebody else's. And if you figure out what you think's funny, you can figure out how to be funny in your own way. And then you're not trying to like improvise like Ben Schwartz. You're not trying to improvise like Jason Mantzoukas. You're improvising like yourself.
You want to know something really funny and interesting? Yeah. It's almost exactly the advice that I gave at the end of the last episode.
Wow.
I was the guest on.
Wow.
We're almost the same person.
I mean, it's very true. We're both sweethearts.
We are such sweethearts.
People love to see us.
I think if there's one thing people are going to take away from this episode, it's going to be that, man, John and Jacob really seem like a couple sweethearts.
Some sweet candy pies.
Yeah. Awesome, dude. Well, this was such a pleasure. You're such a good guy.
Thank you too, man. You were so kind and you complimented me, and I'm blushing. And I don't even know if I said anything worth of value.
No,
but
you did.
Go
you
out did. There. Keep doing it. That's what you got to do.
Yeah.
Do it until you're bored.
Yeah. Is there any sort of things that you would like to sort of name drop or plug or a Twitter or a...
Yeah. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Jacob Wysocki.
So simple. So straightforward.
Very simple.
It's just your name.
Yeah. It's right there.
Awesome. Jacob, you're the best, man.
Thank you. And long live UCB.
Long live UCB. That's the new... I think that's the new... We'll have to put that into the script. That's the new outro... slogan.
I got 20,000 sweatshirts.
20,000.
That.
Woo.
Woo. Wait, John?
Huh?
Thanks.
Hey, thank you, man.
Thanks, man.
This was beautiful.
Thanks, man.
And that was a long form conversation. Next week's episode, we'll pick up with a new round of improvisers based in New York. But fear not, because Jacob Wysocki will be returning as your host in 5 weeks.
5 weeks?
Yeah.
What if I'm busy?
too bad, bro. But yeah, thank you so much for listening, everybody. I hope this conversation was as fun for you as it was for me. Keep doing what you're doing and having fun doing it.
Long live UCB.
Long live UCB.
You've been listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.